Good to have you with us on this Monday afternoon, the final week of 2025, and we're with you until 1 o'clock today. We've got a number. You can call us, 314-436-7900, to join in. Text in if you like, very same number. And if you want to watch the show on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, you can certainly do that. Leave us a comment on any of those platforms, and we'll see it, and maybe we'll get to it. Nate Gatter is in with me, Chris Ranji. We are with you until 1. Nate is, you've heard him on the station a million times, and he is the lead play-by-play voice for Westwood One. Heard him on a lot of college football coverage and NFL. Nate, good to see you.
Good to see you, Chris.
Man, you got to call that Bears-Packers game last week.
Yeah, that was fun for you, wasn't it?
Bro.
A little more fun than last night.
Last night was still was anxiety-inducing in a major way, and the last two games have been that. But you are going to be on the call for Seahawks 49ers, which is for the top seed in the NFC. That game is for number one in the NFC, and that's next week.
Yeah, Saturday night. And I don't think that game will be on KMOX, but the earlier game of our Saturday doubleheader will be. So this is the time of year when everybody wants to be involved in putting those NFL games on, and we're getting down to the end. And I will admit that I was, just for my own selfish purposes, rooting for San Francisco last night to ensure that we would have three of those games that would be division, because Westwood has the two Saturday games and then the Sunday night game. And so in order to protect myself and my own interests, I needed there to be three games for those three slots that were all big.
Look, it's not that big of a deal, you know. Bears lost last night, but they're still in play for the two seed. It's still in their favor. All they have to do is win, or the Eagles have to lose. They'll get that second seed. At worst, they're a three seed, whatever. But they are out of contention for the one, which they would have needed quite a bit of help. And speaking of the NFL, we had an announcement today. In fact, we learned about it right at the start of the Chris and Amy show that Ricky Prohl is going to be the head coach, or has been named the head coach, of the St. Louis Battlehawks. And Ricky is going to join us in about 7 minutes. So we're looking forward to having a conversation with Ricky. But as it pertains to the NFL, you know, this has been, Nate, just a really fun season. It's been a fun season because there is no clear-cut team that is just better than everybody else. There's not a Kansas City Chiefs. You know, there's not this team that you just go, that's easily the Super Bowl favorite. Or, you know, you don't have on that same conference, you know, you don't have the Bills, who look great. The Bills don't look great.
Right.
You know, there just isn't this team.
Bills don't look great. They're not going to be playing at home in the playoffs.
That's right.
There's going to be no Detroit. There's going to be no Cincinnati. There's obviously going to be no Kansas City.
Right.
So you're looking at a lot of new faces. I think new faces in terms of teams, and also new faces in terms of players, right? I mean, look at the top teams in the AFC. We haven't seen Drake May in the playoffs before. We haven't seen Bo Nix in this kind of position in the playoffs before. We haven't seen Trevor Lawrence much in the playoffs at all, and not for a couple of years now.
Caleb, haven't seen him
Caleb
either.
Williams, obviously on the NFC side, haven't seen him. So I think there are top teams that are with new faces, fresh blood in terms of the franchises and in terms of the marquee guys, mainly the quarterbacks that we follow. So I think it creates a lot of interesting narratives. In some ways, it refreshes the playoffs a little bit, because I think sometimes we can get so caught up in certain narratives that it feels like every big game, especially this time of year, and in particular when we get into the playoffs, exists to serve certain narratives, right? Like, if you get Burrow against Mahomes, everything's going to be about how Burrow's Mahomes' kryptonite, right? And
that's
the one guy that he struggles to beat or whatever, as though they're ever on the field at the same time against each other. And with Josh Allen, it's going to be the opposite. It's going to be Josh, you know, you'll still get a little bit of, oh, Allen has trouble in the biggest games or whatever, even though his playoff numbers are phenomenal. And really, there's not a lot of evidence to suggest that he's been the problem in playoff losses that he suffered. I mean, he took the lead with, what, 13 seconds left in the game.
Yeah,
what's the guy really supposed to do? Go out there and play free safety at some point. But you get caught up in some of those narratives so much that it feels like the entire 60 minutes of the football game has to be squeezed through this one particular prism. And I think if you get, for example, an AFC championship game that's the Patriots against the Broncos, sure, we're going to be doing the parallels of like, oh, this used to be a common matchup when it was Brady and Manning, and now it's May and Knicks. And that we'll do a little bit of that. That's just the way that media is going to go. But I think it allows us to look at a game with fresher eyes and kind of just say, what really is this? Instead of trying to fit everything into the past.
And I think we do a little bit too much of this, oh, there's no playoff experience, so therefore the benefit is with the other side. And, you know, Caleb hasn't been there, Bo Nix, you know, Trevor Lawrence, these guys. Look, Kurt Warner wasn't in the Super Bowl and won it. You know, Tom Brady, who beat the Rams for their first Super Bowl. Brady wasn't in the Super Bowl and he won his first one. You know, I don't think that it's, I think we probably make too much of that.
Right. But nobody's sports been is all there about until narratives. They've been there, right? Everybody's got to get there for the first time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And some people get there for the first time and they win the whole damn thing. So, I love this NFL season, not just because my team's actually good and is a factor, but it is because everything is so wide open. I like when there is a dominant team that one to hate. You know, there's, for a lot of people, they've been hate watching the Chiefs.
And the metrics say, whether it was the NFL or especially when it was the NBA, that you are in the majority in that. That although people complain about dynasties that are too strong and too repetitive, they like to watch them.
They are still good for sports because you get to root against them, but there isn't one this year.
Yeah.
So this is a little different and it is very exciting. So speaking of a Super Bowl champion, we've got one coming back to St. Louis as head coach of the St. Louis Battlehawks, Ricky Prohl, and he will join us when we come back on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Backs are split behind Kurt Warner. Takes, back to throw, under some pressure, rainbows the far sideline, and it is Prohl!
Yes!
Touchdown,
yes!
Rams!
Yes!
Ricky Prohl!
Yes! And he went deep on it!
Ricky Prohl, the veteran, listen to this crowd!
17 seasons in the NFL. That includes a handful right here in St. Louis, including a Super Bowl championship, played here for 5 years with the Rams. Also played for the Cardinals and the Seahawks and the Bears and Carolina, the Colts, all over the NFL. Prolific pass catcher Ricky Prohl is with us on KMOX, and Ricky is also the new head coach of the St. Louis Battlehawks. Ricky, congratulations coming back to coach again with the Battlehawks, but this time as the head coach.
Oh, man, I'm so excited. I can't even begin to tell you how fired up I am. Just honored by this opportunity and have dreamt about this opportunity, envisioned this opportunity. I'm so excited to help develop these young men and get them to where they want to go. And that's the NFL, coaches as well. It's very exciting, man. I'm so fired up. And then to do it in the best sports town in the world, St. Louis, Missouri, I couldn't write a better script.
And you have had a great deal of coaching experience since your playing days. And you know, to come back here and now be a head coach of a professional team, how did the process go? You know, when were you made aware of it? Were you lobbying for it? How did this all come down?
2 years ago when I coached in St. Louis, I loved it. I mean, for the last 8 years, I've been developing guys, helping guys at a college in Orange County, California, work with an agency, just preparing guys for the combine, the draft. And then when the Battlehawk job came available, I took it just because I love just helping people, helping young men, teaching them the things that I was taught and just how to help them be a better version of themselves. But I talked to Russ Brandon because I love Beck. Beck was awesome, man. What a great, great coach and just blessed that he hired me. But I talked to Russ. I said, if the St. Louis job ever comes available, I want an interview. I want the job. And I guess they, with the new ownership and realigning some teams and bringing back Orlando and Coach Beck living down there in Tampa and familiar with that area, it was a fit for him to try to bring some more people into the seats. And Russ remembered our conversation. He called me literally Tuesday late afternoon, and I was kind of in awe. I was awestruck. And just to have the opportunity to come back to St. Louis and be the head coach of this team. I know a lot of the guys that are on the roster and coached them. And it was a no-brainer for me. It was just, like I said, I've dreamt about this opportunity. And to be in St. Louis when my kids grew up for 5 years. You know, the memories as a football player there, and the memories, the people I've met, the experiences I've had. It's just I'm beyond excited.
Ricky, you mentioned that part of coaching is kind of teaching the things that you were taught. Is there anybody who stands out, or a couple of people who stand out from your NFL career, whether in St. Louis or not, whose teachings you think you hear yourself sharing now with young players and kind of continuing that cycle?
Yeah. Yeah, you can't. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like growing up as a kid. Your dad tells you stuff, and you're like, "I'll never say that." And then you catch yourself saying the same things to your kids that your dad said to you. But yeah, I mean, Al Saunders, Frank Gans. I mean, I use Gansism all the time. You know, 2-step redirect, 6-inch rising blow. Hey, I'm not attacking you. I'm attacking the problem. The problem is you're not getting it done. But yeah, and Coach Vermeil, you know, people ask me all the time, why do you think you can be a coach? And you know, I've been a receiver coach, but I own a business. And what this business is a family fitness center and sports complex, and it's the same thing, man. I'm trying to teach kids how to learn life skills through sports. And, you know, I learned so many life skills as a player and as a coach. And Coach Vermeil was an amazing man, not just an amazing coach, but amazing man, someone you didn't want to let down. But and just the way he treated us. And Dungy was the same thing. Coach Fox, I had a great deal of respect. I had the blessing of playing for some terrible teams and some great teams. And you really figure out real quick what the recipe is for success and how to treat your players, how to earn their respect. You know, a title, me being a head coach, that doesn't give me respect. I've got to earn it. And the players got to earn my respect. It's a two-way street. And that's going to be my message. But we're going to have fun doing this, and it's, we're going to work hard. But I'm excited to build a culture that I know is conducive to winning, and that's playing for each other, having fun, going to practice every day, not berating guys when they make a mistake, but teaching them and developing them. And that's what I'm truly excited about, and doing it in the best sports town in our country.
Ricky Prohl, new Battle Hawks head coach, is with us on KMOX. And as I mentioned, 17 seasons in the NFL, and the game is, you know, the football is football. The skill level a little bit different in the UFL than in the NFL. But what can you take from the NFL, from that game, and apply it to what you'll be doing with the UFL?
Well, teach them what it takes to play at that next level. It doesn't, you know, you can't take days off. You can't, you know, there's no mental mistakes. It's preparation. It's what are you doing when no one's watching? What are you doing to take care of your body? What are you doing to mentally prepare every day? Like I tell people all the time, like I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I'm not, as a parent, I wasn't a hypocrite. I'm not going to be one as a coach. I've always said that. It's, you think I wanted to go to practice every day? It's a grind, but you're going to be out there. And you have to be out there, and you might as well get better, and you might as well do it with a smile on your face. And my goal is to keep it fun. We all play this game because we love making plays. We love playing with 10 other guys for a common goal, and that's on every play, every game, you know, every season, you know, to win a championship. And it's building that belief in what we're doing and having a purpose every day you step on that practice field. So when game day comes around, it just happens. People ask me all the time, you know, were you nervous when you played in Super Bowls? And no, man, I dreamt about that moment. I wanted the ball but it takes preparation. It takes, you know, coming to work every day, trying to get better. You know, we all tend so much to work on stuff we're good at. We need to work on what we're not good at, work on our weaknesses. How do they become our strengths and those kinds of things? And that's the thing that I feel like I can bring to the table as a head coach and a leader of men, not just for our players, but for our coaches.
Ricky, obviously at any level of football, generally speaking, in most cases, when a head coaching vacancy is out there, it's because a team hasn't been playing that well, and that's why they're looking for a new head coach. This is one of those more unusual situations where there was a vacancy despite the fact that the previous head coach and the team under him had been doing really, really well in recent years. What does it change, if anything, when you're taking over a franchise that's had as much success as the Battlehawks have had in recent seasons, as opposed to taking over a team that fired a coach because they were struggling?
Yeah, I mean that's hey, I feel the pressure. I got to perform because Coach Beck has done a great job in 3 years, and I just got to be true to who I am, and being around Beck, and we had a lot of similarities as far as our philosophies and how we want to coach and how we want to develop these young men and get them to the next level. That was our goal. That was why I wanted to come work for Coach Beck. Anthony's a great, great guy. He's a great player. He's had success for a reason. His son has success for a reason. It's his upbringing, who Coach Beck is. So we have a lot of similar characteristics in how we want our football team to look like, how we want it to act on game day, and the things that we want it to accomplish to be successful. The pressure is definitely on me, but I look forward to the challenge, look forward to hopefully getting us over that hump, because he did do a tremendous job with this organization and the Battlehawks.
Ricky Proles, so as you know, Battlehawks fans have really come out to support this team in a way that other markets in the UFL really have not. It's been really impressive to see St. Louis show up for this team. Why do you think that is? Why does St. Louis support the Battlehawks better than any other team in the league?
Because it's the best sports town in our country. They love sports. They don't care what time of year. They don't care if someone's got a baseball, a football, a hockey puck, a basketball, I think a slew basketball. I mean, they want to come see it, and they want to come see people compete. And it's a great it my 5 years there, it was so good for my family. The experiences they had, they embraced my family. And I think it's just a matter of bringing your kids out to the ballpark. I mean, that's what St. Louis is all about, is bringing your family out to the ballpark. And it's just they miss football. They deserve football. Now they deserve another championship, and that's what I hope to bring. But that's why I think there's so many people coming. It's just such a community-oriented city and surrounding towns, Chesterfield and Westport. All the that's why I think that they just they come out in groves. And have led in attendance over the last 4 to 5 years.
You wear the Super Bowl ring around these players just so they know what you're talking about?
No.
You don't?
No, I don't. I just, when I was younger, I wanted people to know who I was. And now I just, one of my ultimate compliments is when I would go in and talk to these guys or work them out or meet them, and then I'd see him again the next day or next week, and they'd be like, "Dang, Coach, I didn't know you played in 4 Super Bowls." I'm like, and I say, "Well, how did you find out?" And he goes, "Well, I knew when you got up there talking, you knew what you were talking. I could tell you knew what you were talking about, so I Googled your butt." So I just try to let my talking and my experience come through, and they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out. But I don't go in there and beat my chest and say, "Hey, I caught touchdowns in Super Bowls and championships," because it isn't about me. It's about them. And I know sometimes you want to give yourself credibility to pass the knowledge and the wisdom, but they'll figure it out. If they're smart, they'll figure it out. And that's just been my approach.
Well, we're looking forward to having you back in St. Louis, looking forward to Battlehawks games. And just so you know, and you may already know this, but the turf you played on isn't there anymore. They went,
yeah, and got the new old turf. Flat turf is gone.
Yeah, that turf.
It's probably in somebody's front yard somewhere or something,
Was it, do you remember it being bad when you played on it?
No, we loved it. Me, Isaac, Torrey, Oz, we loved it. It was fast. It was a fast track. We just felt like, man, there was nobody. You come in the dome, man. We're so fast on that track. Yeah, now it's the new turf, but we loved it. We don't remember it being like Philadelphia, which was awful. The vet was terrible. It's crazy to think that we played on that stuff, though, how hard it was.
I know.
It is absolutely crazy.
It's amazing. Well, everything's better now. Got new turf. The stadium is, it will be loud, as you know. You've seen it. And even for these Battle Hawks games, it's been a whole lot of fun. It's like going to a party. Just really, really enjoying it. And we're glad to have you back in St. Louis. Looking forward to the upcoming season. Ricky, congratulations on now coming back. And thank you for visiting with us today.
Thank you for having me, and can't wait to see everybody.
That is Ricky Prohl, former Rams receiver, Super Bowl champion, and now head coach of the St. Louis Battlehawks, with us on 104.1 FM KMOX. And we'll keep it going when we come back. Bob Ramsey, he is the voice of the Billikens. They just won by a million yesterday over Principia. So we're going to talk to Bob Ramsey. SLU men's basketball continues to roll. Rammers next on KMOX. Gashouse Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. Nate Gatter, Chris Ranji. Today, Tom Ackerman is out, and we are with you until 1 o'clock. So let us bring in our guy, Bob Ramsey. He is the play-by-play voice of the Billikens. He is a St. Louis Sports Hall of Famer as well, and he's with us now on KMOX. Good afternoon, Rammer. How you doing?
Hey, gentlemen, Happy New Year. It's good to be visiting with you.
Yeah, and we just had a conversation with Ricky Prohl, and I know you were, I mean, followed very closely the Rams. It's awesome to have him coming back to be head coach of the Battlehawks here in St. Louis, and as important as his team and his contributions were to the city.
Yeah, you know, and I think the way he represents himself, not just in the way he played, but in interacting with fans and the media, not as much, except as using the media as a conduit, and his communication skills. I think those are all great assets, and he'll be embraced immediately. There's no doubt about it.
So the Billikens, they continue to roll, man. They're 12-1, and Principia yesterday just wasn't any match for them at all.
Yeah, Division III team, you know, it doesn't even count on Principia's record. And I think these kind of games, you're using as a tune-up. I think it'd probably be better suited for everybody to look at it as an in-season exhibition. And who knows, free tickets or really discounted tickets and free hot dogs and come have fun and watch an exhibition game. But it was played, and you did well. The real issue there is playing well against unevenly matched opponents, because over the years you see games like that where there really is a great discrepancy in talent, and those kind of games can get ugly, not in the score but in the way it's played. It becomes a rec center game and guys are just running around, you know, I used to call it run, shoot, and holler, and just jacking up shots and throwing the ball around. But the Billikens did a pretty nice job in playing their game. And I think that's the best thing you can hope for in that kind of a matchup.
Yeah, that's the question. Is it really useful, especially when you've got St. Joe's coming up on New Year's Eve?
Coach Schertz felt like, would he have preferred to have a better opponent? Yes. But you want to have a game where you're able to knock off the rust and sort of get back to your, you know, physically being ready to play basketball against another opponent. It really only practiced 2 days since the Christmas break. And so I understand having a tune-up game, and I think the Bills use it very effectively.
St. Joe's is just a weird team, Rammer. It feels like we've been saying that in one way or another for one reason or another for a while, and that this is just it's a program that hasn't made a lot of sense for quite a period of time, and obviously now they had the coaching change shortly yep. before the season started, and resulted in bringing in Steve Donahue in September, which is highly, highly unusual at this yep. level. Considering all of that and the maybe unsurprisingly up and down nature of how their season has gone as a result, how do you make sense of a team that, you know, lost to Coastal Carolina a week ago, but really hung with Syracuse at the Carrier Dome earlier this month and is, you know, coming into play SLU in just a couple of days?
Well, I know you better be ready to play. It's all conference play now, and it all really matters. And in one way or another, all games matter. But now we're into conference play, and it changes everything. And with a new coach, you still basically know the personnel really well. They've always had a lot of talent and always been up and down. So I think that that is their challenge, and your challenge is to not let what might appear to be disorganization affect your preparation for the game. You know, you get 9 home games in conference play, and you you better be ready and not let an opponent come up and surprise you. You need to treat all opponents with respect, whether you're talking about Fordham, whether you're talking about VCU. And that kind of preparation is necessary in conference play. It'll really be a grind. I expect a real physical game. And, you know, those are the kinds of things you need to be ready for. And back to yesterday's game, the officials didn't call much. And the Bills played through some physical physical plays that could have been a play where you might complain about it in a more legitimate battle. But playing through physicality is something you must have when you get to conference play. So, and I expect to see it on New Year's Eve. It'll be a physical game, and you better be ready for St. Joe's.
And Rammer, we talked about this at the very beginning of the season, that because the non-conference schedule wasn't quite as strong as I think some of us wanted it to be, that they really needed to take care of business during that stretch before they get to A-10 play, which, as you mentioned, starts on New Year's Eve against St. Joe's. Did they do enough, you think, that if they have a successful conference season, that maybe that resume does look okay when it's at large time?
You're going way over my head. Yeah. I don't know what the committee votes on.
Yeah.
All you can do is play the games in front of you, right? And you did play poorly against Stanford, and they beat you at the buzzer. And so that hurts. But still only one loss. And the way Stanford's playing, the way they're playing now, are they going to be better than the middle of the pack or better than the bottom tier of the ACC? It sort of looks like it. And if they can improve their season and make that, you know, a quad 2 loss, or if you're really lucky, a quad 1 loss, you know, those things look pretty good. The other 4 teams that you played should be quad 2s, and maybe a 1 or 2 turn out to be a quad 1, and you won those games. So, like I say, you can only play the games that are on your schedule. And but I think more to your point, you've got to be great in conference play. You've got to roll through conference play, or non-conference won't matter.
Bob, it seems like Josh Schertz has pretty much narrowed down his rotation to this group of his top 9 guys at this point. Is there anybody in that group, guys who are getting significant minutes at this stage, who you think could still give the Billikens a little bit more as this season goes on, to give them that extra boost as they chase their expectation, which is not just being toward the top, but being at the top of the Atlantic 10?
You know, one guy you might look at, well, there's 2 really, and they're both bigs. I think your guards are playing great, and I don't have much quarrel with that. But you look at Jax Kerr, who just got voted A-10 Freshman of the Week with his first career double-double. At 6'11", he can shoot it, although the numbers don't show it now. When you know, I've been watching him in practice since June. I think he's got a chance to really be a contributor. He's played in 9 of the games. Of the games he's played in, he's played a little less than 10 minutes a game. I think there's some real ability there. And as the season goes on, he is going to be in a position to give you some significant minutes in big games. And the other guy is Paul Otieno, who I think he would tell you is not really where he wants to be, but has really looked much better in the last couple of games, last two, three games. And I think Ochieno, as that true power forward, if he can really establish himself on the boards on both ends, I think those two bigs can step up and really give you sort of that next step up that you're asking about. I like I say, I think the guards have been great. Avila's been everything you want him to be and more, great leader. But I think Ochieno and Kerr are those next guys you can look to say, how do you get to the next level and who can help get you there?
Who scares you the most in the Atlantic 10 at this stage?
You know, I don't think I'm scared of anybody, and I know Josh Schertz isn't. I think it's the usual suspects, the teams you respect the most, VCU and Dayton, George Mason and George Washington are very competitive, and I think you look at, so you kind of call it the usual suspects. I think what's surprising is Loyola kind of dropping off, and can they kind of get their act back together in conference play? Who knows? And then St. Bonaventure, Mark Schmidt is a great coach. And they're a team that, regardless of their record, can jump up and get somebody at home or on the road where you might not expect it. So, again, I always call it the usual suspects, the top of the list being VCU and Dayton.
Bob, obviously the attendance has been a storyline, a point of discussion in non-conference play. Some of that may be the schedule. Some of it may be other competition for interest around St. Louis, whatever. There have been some well-attended games in there, especially the ones against the bigger opponents. It's shaping up like Wednesday is going to be a pretty nice-looking crowd for the A-10 opener against St. Joe's. And I would think that's the kind of thing that Josh Schertz takes as a real priority, because he's been vocal about wanting to get people in, and not necessarily in a way where he's complaining about the attendance. If anything, it's the opposite. He's saying if we win enough, if we play well enough, people will show up to support. We have to give them a product that they want to watch and they want to be part of. And I would imagine that he and his guys take that as a big opportunity to put on a show on Wednesday. And if they do that, hopefully earn themselves some returning customers.
Well, there are a couple of elements there. One, the fans who have been showing up are awesome. They've really done a great job, been vocal, been proactive. It's the empty seats. You wonder why the folks aren't there, especially when you're looking at a really good brand of basketball. Now, historically, discounting a couple of years in the 90s, and I'm going back before your guys' time when the Bills were in the top five in attendance, like 3 out of 4 years or something like that in the nation. Typically, and I can't really put my finger on it, SLU attendance picks up during the holidays. For instance, yesterday, a Division III team, the attendance was really good. And we expect a sellout or near sellout on Wednesday. I think as of today, I think there are still seats left. So I would implore folks not to wait till, you know, the day of the game, looking for a good seat walk up. You know, go down to SLU now, 9774 SLU. It's going to be good. And it is really interesting when you look at patterns over the year that the holidays, with the students away from campus, that attendance lifts. So, and the St. Joe's crowd sort of reflects a traditional pattern. One thing I would say to the folks that are going to come enjoy and have Billiken basketball and have great attendance the rest of the way, glad you're coming in. And with this team and the story it has sort of laid out there in chapter one, the non-conference season, you sort of missed out on the first half of the story, because it's growing, it's building. But I'm glad they're coming for the second half of the season.
To your point about those tickets that are available, I think they're still advertising their prorated season ticket deal where you get the 9 A-10 home games. It's like $71 a seat.
That's great.
That's just under $8 per ticket per game. I mean, I think you're going to have a very hard time getting a better deal.
That's not bad.
You have a tough time getting $8 tickets to see minor league baseball, and this is very much major league basketball, so I would jump on that.
Yeah, you know, it's a ridiculous opportunity for folks, for a team that's ranked, depending on what ranking you want to look at, you know, there's what, counting the coaches' votes and all that stuff, there's probably half a dozen, 6 or 8 rankings that you can all look at. And I think the Bills are between 25 and 40 in almost all of them. That's a heck of a team when you look at just mid-major stuff, and that's really just for fun. Doesn't really matter, but they're in the top couple, top five in all the mid-major rankings, and it's a style that I don't know what you wouldn't like about it when you're averaging 80-plus points a game. So the product is there, the record is there, the venue is there, the price is there. So, you would ask folks who are fans, what are you waiting for? And it appears, based on the forecast for Wednesday's game, that they're not waiting any longer.
Yep, the Billikens right now in the new AP poll are 30th. They are 26th in the net, and they're starting to get some respect around the country. Bob Ramsey will have the call of the game. Broadcast starts at 2:45 on New Year's Eve. They will take on St. Joe's and begin A-10 play. Rammer, good to talk to you. And as we say goodbye, why don't you tell everybody about our friends at Royal Banks?
Absolutely. A great sponsor for Billiken basketball, and have been for a long time. And they've been really a partner for you since 1964, a local bank, and they've really grown. Now 16 locations in St. Louis and St. Charles on the east side and northeast Missouri, all here to help you achieve your financial goals. 314-212-1500, or of course, royalbanksofmo.com online. Royal Banks, investing in our communities, one client at a time. Member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. When we wrap up here, Mike Claiborne and Rennie Knott are in for the Dave Glover Show. That will be next. Just a few more moments to go. Nate Gatter, Chris Ranji. Nate, as you mentioned, you will be calling the 49ers and Seahawks game for Westwood One next week. What a great way to finish the season. A lot of good games happening then. I want to go back last night, though, to Luther Burden's performance for the Bears, who really seems to be a guy who's breaking out. And when he's gotten limited opportunity throughout the year, he's looked good. And then last night, incredible.
Yeah, it's only three games now. Three games that Luther Burden has played when Rome Odunze has been out. So, like, it's the fourth straight game Rome's missed, but
the
Luther Burden missed
sick
the Packers
with the flu.
Game.
Yeah.
So, Burden's been the leading receiver for the Bears in all three of those now, close to 300 combined yards across the three with his, 138, I think it was, for him in the end last night and the touchdown. And I thought Collinsworth, I know you and Chris Collinsworth are not seeing eye to eye on all his Bears commentary.
He was right on with Luther, though.
He was right on with Burden and emphasizing yards per route run, which I think sounds like a really advanced statistic when people hear it, and really is actually pretty simple. It's just meant to control for production without penalizing him for time off the field, because in the first half of the season, he was only playing so much, he was only running so many routes, he can't be expected to produce while he's standing on the chalk over on the sideline. And he has been the fourth most efficient receiver in all the football. And if you're ever wondering, is this stat worth anything? Look at the other names that are around a guy toward the top. And Collinsworth listed them out. Puka Nacua, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and Devontae Smith. If you're the fourth guy behind those three, probably a sign that you're doing something right. I mean, yeah. I think there's no question the number 39 overall pick was a tremendous value for the Bears in terms of Luther's upside. It was just a question of whether he was going to do all the things he needed to do, like Ricky Prohl talked about, the discipline day-to-day, and he's done it.
He might end up being a star.
He could be.
Yeah, I think he's going to be really great. Got a quad injury, final play of the game last night, but the indication is that it'll be all right. Nothing too serious, which is very, very good. So appreciate you, Nate. Thanks for hanging out with me. Tomorrow, Bernie Miklas will be on the show. I don't know if we have Tom or not. Is Tom back? We don't know. Nobody knows anything around here.
Tom will
Bernie's
be here.
Be here.
Well, the Gas House Gang
back
will
on
persist.
Wednesday,
yes. The Gas House Gang always carries on.
Yeah, it happens. Nate Gatter, Chris Ranji, thanks for listening in to the Gas House Gang today. Back tomorrow at 12. Coming up next, Klaibs and Rennie, they are in for the Dave Glover Show on 104.1 FM KMOX.